Hi there. Welcome to Extra Innings, covering all the bases. My name is Albert Dabba. I am a therapist, life coach, and a filmmaker. Tonight, we will be talking about different subjects that deal with mental health. Extra Innings is a show that I created about 4 months ago, and we talk about all kinds of challenges that people have. Such as mental illness, depression, bipolar disorder, and all different kinds of anxieties, including suicide. And these are subjects that are universal. The guests I've had on the show have been from all over, working in all different kinds of professions that have had to deal with certain kinds of challenges and have gone through their lives and their journeys where they're able to come on the show and talk about it. Extra Innings actually came from a movie that I produced, directed, and written, and also acted in. And it is now on Amazon Prime. And it is based on my family growing up in the 1960s in Brooklyn, New York, and what my family endured and all the different problems that came up. And I was the youngest of four, and how I survived through the different challenges of my family. Again, that's Extra Innings on Amazon Prime. Tonight's guest is Laura Sanstra. She lives in Alberta, Canada. And she has gone through some of these different kinds of challenges herself, and she'll talk about them tonight. And what I think is really important is for people to be able to have these discussions so they can understand that they're not alone when different things come up, and they can learn and listen to what our guests have to say. So Laura, how are you this evening? Or it's probably earlier over there right now in Alberta.
Yeah, it's just 4 in the afternoon, but doing great today. Thank you.
Great.
Thanks for having me on your show. Very honored.
Sure. You were telling me that you've had all these thunderstorms there today, so I hope we don't lose you by
yes, that's my hope as well.
Okay. So tell us about yourself. Did you grow up in Alberta, or are you from somewhere?
Yeah. Born and raised in a really small town, Rocky Mountain House, Alberta. It's about 8,000 people. That's about it. And I'm one of four. I have three brothers. I'm the second one in the family. So yeah, I'm a fighter.
You're a fighter. Well, good. Okay. So we have talked several times before tonight, and you have expressed to me that you lost your husband to suicide. So I know for many people that's a subject that people don't want to hear or talk about, because there is such a big stigma about that, about suicide. So tell us a little bit about your experience of dealing with that, and anything that you can. And, you know, I know we're going back a bit in time, and, you know, we'll just talk about it and see, you know, how it goes.
Yeah, sure. So I was married for 18 and a half years to Dennis, and we ran a bunch of companies together. He was very entrepreneurial, very aggressive businessman. Anything he touched, he turned to gold. So it was great. I always said that I had to run to keep up to him. So yeah, we worked side by side. I'm administrative. That's what I went to school for. And that's, numbers make sense to me. I'm organized. So I would always run alongside him and, you know, keep things tidy and organized. And he was successful. And I think that's why suicide can be so hard to understand. You know, like, I loved him and he knew it. He had two daughters at the time. They were 12 and 13. And so they're 17 and 18 now. And a successful company, live in a beautiful home out in the country on 4 acres of land. So from the outside looking in, everything was perfect. And so many people came to me after he passed away and said, I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. Why? Like, everything looks so good from the outside. And I think that's why it's important to talk about mental health, right? Dennis was the kind of guy that everybody came to with their problems, and he could fix everybody else's problems. But obviously, heaven forbid him actually open up about having problems, right? And I think that stigma is stronger on men, like that they can't tell people they have problems. They can't talk to their friends when they're having issues. Cause I don't know why us women, we're okay to get together and have a little hen party or have a little husband bashing session or say, you know, my marriage sucks. And the other girl will be like, oh, mine too. Right. But guys don't do that. Well, anyways, he didn't have friends that did it. So, and I don't know, maybe there's a degree of pride or whatever that he wasn't willing to put down. I don't know. I wish he could tell his story from the other side, but he can't. Right. So all I can do is try and piece together what made sense. And I mean, we were married, so we lived together, we slept together, and we worked together. So I was with him 24 hours a day. And when he killed himself, I was like, okay, wait, what? So then you stop and look back and go, okay, did I miss some cues? Did I miss? And it was easier to piece together, but when you've never been exposed to it, when you've never lived through it, when you've never been like side by side losing somebody to suicide, you don't even know to look for those cues. And after he left, there was some guilt there that I had to deal with. Like, oh my goodness, of anybody on the earth, why didn't I see? Right? I mean, and married to him for 18 years. But the thing about it is it's the whole like boil the frog in a hot pot of water kind of concept, I believe. I think, you and I were talking about it earlier, that suicide is not a selfish decision. It's like a sickness that starts so subtly, like you kind of have the sniffles and then you get used to the sniffles and then you get a cough, but you have the cough for so long that you kind of get used to coughing. And I don't know, I think you entertain that thought long enough and then it eats you alive. But that's a process. And I can see his struggle that worsened over a period of about 2 years, where he became a very difficult person to live with. The last 2 months were horrendous.
Did you before those last 2 years, was there anything that you recognized? I mean, did you ever think that he was a guy that, I mean, did he get depressed? Yeah. Did he get really down at times that, you know, you sat and talked about it?
I think he was depressed, but he would only react in anger. So because I think that anger, even in his home that he grew up in, anger was an acceptable emotion, where depression was not an acceptable emotion, where sadness wasn't an acceptable emotion. It was like, well, suck it up and get over it. And that's what he was raised in, which is not as uncommon as one would think. Just, and especially in men, right? Just not encouraged.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember once a therapist saying to me, or maybe it was, because I have an MSW degree and I studied and worked as a therapist and still do at times. And I remember someone saying, you know, anger is the other side of depression. And I think anger is definitely more acceptable for men anyway.
Yes, I 100% agree with you. I do. So I think the deeper that struggle became, he became more and more angry, to the point that, like, working together, and obviously we had employees when he left, we had 9 men in the field. So we owned a backhoe services and a company that did backhoe services. So any kind of trenching or sewer system install, we would dig your basement, build a driveway, whatever, and plumbing. So complete plumbing for a house. So we had 9 men working for us. And those last 2 months, it was just like, oh my word. You could do nothing right. So his struggle just became so out loud, but we couldn't understand it, right? Because the things that he would get so angry at didn't match. You know, my dad always said that the crime has to kind of equal the punishment, right? So, you know, someone would do something way down here and his punishment was like so far-fetched. It was like, dude, where's this coming from? It wasn't adding up. So yeah, I never would have guessed.
Was he someone that basically thought a lot about what he did and professionally, and if it didn't go right, he would, have a freak out from it or like.
100%. Yeah. And I actually spoke with one of his close friends after he left, and we both agreed that his value of himself was reflected in his business success. So if business wasn't kind of ripping, then his value was lower too, right? And Yeah. And that could be, I don't know, founded in anything, maybe low self-esteem. I don't know all of that, right? Like, we never know the heart of a person unless they tell it to us. Right.
Yeah. So, I think it's really, I really feel like it's I mean, it's difficult for anyone to really open up and tell someone how they feel. Their deepest feelings. Even if someone says, well, I love you, what does that really mean to them? What does that mean to them? And equating your value in terms of what are your occupation of what you do, of how well you're doing to how you are as a person, I think is very common, particularly in men, because we look around us and there's so much media going on. You can see all these different people that are successful and making whatever is making money, or just their publicity gets so high that even people like that sometimes take their lives because even as well known they are, as we know this for a fact, they take that people like that have also taken their lives. And it's one of these things that I think that it's not just a difficult problem to diagnose, but it's difficult to treat. Because people are sometimes, I think the way they're raised and how they go about their lives, sometimes they get so constricted that it's hard for them to really open up.
Yeah,
100%. That's what I'm wondering, like in those last 2 months, other than getting angry, did he ever open up to you?
No, and actually, in those last 2 months, he actually closed down even harder. And I've talked to a couple of people, and they suggest this theory that when someone is getting that close to ending their life, that they begin to push close people away so that they logically, they won't miss me as much when I'm gone because they kind of are mad at me right now, right? So logically that makes sense, but emotionally it doesn't, right? You know, so that's what was happening, is that he was getting farther and farther away and nastier and nastier. So just pushing anybody that was a true friend, just pushing them away harder. So
it sounds to me like because you work together, and how did you grow up together in the same town?
Well, same town, yes. We were both born and raised in this little town, but we were 12 and a half years difference. So I was, when we met, I was 21 and he was 34.
I see.
So that's a pretty significant age difference. So, I mean, 12 and a half years, right? I'm just coming into kindergarten and he's just graduated. So that's pretty crazy when you're a kid, but when you're an adult, it's all a big muddy mess, right? It doesn't really matter.
When you got together, how old were you and how old was he?
I was, so when we met, I was 19, right? And he would have been 32 or whatever. Yeah. So, and then we got married when I was 21, he was 34, and we didn't start having kids till he was 40. So yeah, it was a wild ride and raised very differently. So I was raised in church, always raised in kind of a Christian bubble, went to the Christian school, had Christian friends from church, whatever. My family is all religious. So it's like, this was me in my little bubble over here. And he was raised, you know, his dad was oil patch, totally hard ass, kind of gnarly dude. Good morals, good people, really good people, but just rough. I don't know how else to say it, like rough around the edges and just work hard or you're worth nothing, you know? So yeah, different sides of the track, so to speak.
And but, you said he was 40 when you had your first child?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, crazy. So yeah.
You have two daughters, I believe you said?
Yeah, two daughters. So they're 18 and 17 now, so. So yeah, no, it's good. I mean, and I'm so thankful I had them. I never wanted kids, but he wanted kids right away. And I was like, nope, give me 5 years. And then we waited 5 years and oh my word, like what would I do without them now?
Right.
Like they're everything now. They're everything. I am remarried now, but there's nothing like babies. I'll tell you, they're the best.
Yeah.
They're the best.
Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about how this affected your kids. Mm-hmm. And how it affects them now, because obviously losing their dad's got to be a real heartbreak. So we'll be right back in a minute with Laura, and thank you. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Ann Dow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hi, we're back with Laura Sansra on Extra Innings. Laura, we started to talk about your kids. So tell us how did they react to the losing your husband?
Well, the crazy thing was after he died, I had to try and grieve myself and sort out so much stuff, left with a business, left with two girls, left with everything, right? And you kind of go into survival mode yourself. And then there's the two of them, 12 and 13 at the time, who still need a parent who is functional, right? So I needed people in my life. I'm a total people person. I can shoot the breeze with pretty much a crocodile. So I need people in my house all the time. I need to talk about what's bothering me, whatever. So my oldest daughter, Bria, is the same. She needs people. Megan, my youngest, is an introvert all the way, and she needs peace and quiet, and she likes to go into her bedroom and just recharge in quiet, right? So that was crazy because I needed people, and I was not sensitive to the fact that Megan needed not people. Like, Megan was fine with me and fine with her sister, but not a house full of people, right? But you don't know. Like, if you haven't walked through that before, you don't know how to do it. Right. So just even watching them process it as only a kid brain can do. Right. It sucks. It sucks. And I think the biggest part of walking through that that bugs me is I'll feel okay about the situation until it bothers them. Then it bothers me again. Right. Because that's the parent. Like, I feel like most parents will put their kids in front of their own feelings whenever it's necessary. Right. Your kids end up, I don't know. You lay your life down for your kid in whatever, to whatever extent that means. So I tried to start a couple of different, I don't know if you want to call them traditions, but he was buried in a cemetery that we drive past every day to get into town. And it's one of the biggest ones in Rocky. And so I would often, like, even before I was going home, I would just turn in, go into the cemetery. And they're like, what are we doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just going to say hi to Dad. So I would just make it kind of a lighthearted, kind of a very acceptable, you're not weird to go do this or whatever. and just drive over to his headstone and make sure it looked good and whatever, and then drive out, like, not weird or awkward or anything. And there were days when I would go there and take a lawn chair and I would sit it right there and I would yell and I would cry and I don't know what to do and why did you leave? And it felt like a point of contact, and I wanted the kids to understand that, you know, I just didn't want it to be weird. That's all. I didn't want it to be creepy, because it's a beautiful cemetery. So anyways, I was telling you the other day that actually, I track my kids because they're young on their cell phones. I know where they're at. And I looked at Bria's location and she was in the cemetery. And I was like, oh. So I texted her. I said, are you good? She's like, yeah. I said, are you alone? Nope, I'm with my friend Elena. So that was fine. And then I just kind of backed off and I thought, okay, awesome. Like, she's obviously having a crappy day and she went to go talk to her dad, which I love. And I actually, it's tricky with teens because I haven't been able to flat out ask her, why did you go there? It's super tricky. Like, where's that line of, like, really honoring what's super tricky for them and versus, like, pushing into their space and saying, what's bothering you? What's bothering you? What's bothering you? And anyway, so I think it's to do with grad, because she's graduating grade 12 in June 29. It's less than 2 weeks away and her dad is not here. So during the week then, her dad used to have a 1941 Ford truck with a huge engine in it. And she did 100-foot shootouts with him 1 year. And so she came to me. It was about a couple of days after the cemetery day. And she said, we sold it to a gentleman that we know. Would you call him and see if I could drive that truck for the grad parade? I'm like, there we go. That's that connection to dad that she needed, right? And he's graciously said yes. I'm so thrilled he said yes. So I think that was kind of the process. But as a parent, you're not always able to just get into their brains and say what's going on. And I honestly think, like Albert, I honestly think they don't know what's going on. They can't piece it together. I'm 45 years old and I still, some days I'm like, I still don't understand it. I can't, you know, grief is such a crazy, layered, complex thing. So if I still struggle with it,
yeah. Have you gone for any kind of therapy when this occurred?
Yes, I did with my pastor, and then I sent my girl. So Bria was willing to. She's the extrovert, so she was willing to. So she did, and she actually found it very helpful. She was really open with this lady and just really blunt. Megan, I think it was 2.5 years after he passed away that I finally convinced/pushed her into it. And she only went for maybe 3 sessions. And Megan's personality is one that requires excessive trust before she opens up to you. That's a typical introvert, right? So for her to open up to a therapist or a counselor, and it would take her a year to establish that trust, I feel. So that, I feel like it wasn't as productive. And I do worry about her a little bit, because if she keeps herself excessively busy, she can keep those feelings pushed aside, right? But I remind her, like, if you don't let them out and you don't speak about them and you don't express them, they're just boiling under the surface. And they will blow up eventually. And they do. You know, every 6 to 9 months, we'll have like a little bit of a, whoa, what's going on? And often they don't know. They'll tell me. I don't know.
So this happened about, what, 6 years ago? Five, six years ago?
Almost five. In November, it'll be 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which honestly, on one hand, feels like 3 days ago. I feel like anything to do with the kids, the time span's shorter. Anything to do with me, it feels like forever ago in some aspects. Like, I've since closed the company. I auctioned all of the stuff off last July. So from last July till today, I've not worked. And I've just had to tidy up the books and whatever. I'm still selling the land and property. I haven't sold the buildings or anything yet. So I'm working on that. So it's like that chapter is still waiting to close, but that's the final page, is to sell the place. The workplace.
Did you ever, within this time that has passed, Have you ever been part of any groups of people that have lost their loved ones to suicide?
No, I haven't. I've never really looked into stuff like that. And I think the reason for that is because I still attend church. Excuse me. And I don't know. I just, I have great, great support there. And I just love those people. And because I'm an extrovert, I process through my mouth. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that is helpful. Everybody does have to figure out how they process. There's no doubt. But even introverts, when they can get it out of their mouth, it helps.
Somehow. Yeah, why I bring it up, because I never went to a group. From losing my brother and sister to suicide until maybe 6 months. Well, no, actually, it was before COVID. I started going to a group. It was suggested as I was talking to different. I'm Jewish. Okay. I was talking to different rabbis. I was showing the film in different synagogues. And, okay. And different festivals,
yes.
There were Jewish festivals and regular festivals.
Yes.
And somehow my name got around and someone said, hey, why don't you join this group?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget the rabbi who I spoke to around the group said, oh yeah, well you can join, but I don't want you to sit there and talk about, like, promote the film.
Mm.
The film wasn't, I don't think it was out yet, but anyway, I said, no, I'd never joined a group like this. I'm curious what it would be like. So when I got to the group, I was the first one there that night. There was about 10 people that came, and many of them recurring. I think it was once a month, right?
Okay.
And, I started thinking, let's see, how long ago was it my brother and sister died? And I realized, wow, my brother had died 50 years previous. So, and my sister about 30 years or something. And so in other words, I had never been to a group, and it was 50 years. And but I got a lot out of it. And and I guess I'm bringing it up because, you know, you never know what you can get out of something, no matter when it is or what time it is. And, you know, like, I thought, well, I could just breeze through this. And but I got very emotional talking about it.
Really?
You know, because here I am in a room where everyone, and I got emotional just listening to someone who just lost their 13-year-old kid to suicide. I mean, like, some of these things I heard were like, wow.
Yeah.
And it was a room full of people, like 10, 12 people who lost their loved ones to suicide. And I really felt, wow, this is such... You know, this is live right in front of me. Now they do it on Zoom during COVID, and I attended one a couple of weeks ago. But I felt it helpful just to, you know, I don't go to regularly to a synagogue. I used to, but I don't anymore. But I found it, and it's run by this Jewish board, and run very delicately. And, you know, it's something that I feel is another way to be able to deal with, you know, such a terrible loss, a tough loss.
Well, I believe when you don't feel alone, it's just better.
Yeah, it is. So, all right, well, we'll be back in a minute and talk more with Laura and how she has gone about dealing with her loss. Thank you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Laura, what I wanted to ask you was, from this experience that you had, and that it's not just to me an experience, this is a life-changing event that you have gone through, that, as you just said, it's like you'll sometimes think, what happened? How did this happen? You know, it'll come to your mind. And I can definitely understand that. What have you learned? Are there any things that you, when you look back about yourself, that you learned that you didn't see before that you see now, that, you know, kind of like helps you think how to put this in a place where you, not that it maybe you can understand it more, but that it kind of settles a little bit since it's been about, you said, 5 years. Yeah. Not that 5, 10, 15 years makes it any easier. But where you are, like where you are, like you're on the show right now talking very openly about it, mm-hmm. which I think is wonderful to do, because I really believe this helps other people dealing who are dealing with a situation such as this.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I had an opportunity to share it at a ladies' meeting with our church, and it was good. It was hard. It was a lot fresher in my mind when it happened. But man, what have I taken from it? Honestly, it's humbled me a lot because I don't know. And the older we get, I swear, the more humble we get, because we just get wiser and we realize how much we don't know the older we get, right? Yeah. But I feel like throughout my marriage and whatever, obviously I've reflected back on that marriage and I've realized, oh, sheesh, there's the things that I could have and probably should have done differently, but I didn't know. I didn't know to do it. And like love languages, I think are so, so important. Like there's only what 5 of them on the planet. So it's not even complicated. So learn your spouse's love language and speak in their language. Don't speak in your own. Right. I think that's huge, huge. And I think I caused unintentional damage in my ignorance. I know I did, but you know, for example, Dennis, when we were married, his love language is gifts, giving gifts. So if I were to give him a gift or something, that's the loudest way that I can say, I love you. Well, that's my lowest, but often we express our love to each other in our own love language, right? So Dennis would buy me gifts and they were extravagant and it made me crazy. It made me completely crazy because I would right away be like, oh my gosh, how much did you just spend on that? So I wasn't grateful. I now like devalued the gift by worrying about how much money he had just spent on it. And so I just like, you know, deflated the whole situation where I should have recognized, okay, he's not speaking my language. However, it's his ultimate form of saying, I love you. Right. And I didn't recognize that till after he left, but to admit that Okay, I did play a part. I was not the cause of the suicide. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. I believe that it was a thought that was entertained and it grew and it grew. But I do believe there's contributing factors, right, that pull in the depression and pull in the worthlessness or whatever that human's struggling with. So just to like reflect back and go, okay, how could I have done that differently? Or maybe if I ever get a chance to remarry, maybe I should walk into it with my eyes very open. And I never dreamt I'd have a second chance, right? I mean, our marriage wasn't great, but I always say it was like an 80-20 split. 80% of the time it was fine. 20% was not fine, but that 20% was really not fine. So still the 80%, I'm like, whatever, I can still make this happen. You know, I never would have left him. I know that for sure. I never would have left the guy. But to have a second chance, I'm like, okay, I feel like I need to do a few things a little differently. And I'm ever so grateful for that, for real. But it sucks how I had to get there.
So you've been married, you remarried a couple of years ago, is that right?
Yeah, not even 2 years yet. January will be 2 years. No, that's not true. It has been 2 years, January. Sheesh. Yes. And totally different, obviously. But yeah, just and that's a dynamic shift in itself. So especially dealing with children, right, where they knew their dad and their dad hung the moon, right? So then another man comes into the house and it's a whole different dynamic of like blending a family. It's not just like a divorce and a divorce. It's like a suicide. So it's like a dad left me and now another dude's coming into the house. And where does that all fit? And what do we call him? And how do we act around him? And it was not wonderful for the first year and a half.
Has it changed since then?
It has. It's settled right out. And not that they're excessively close. Megan, my introvert, is actually very close to him because he's an introvert as well. So they just feed off of each other, right? There's that peacefulness between the two of them. Where Bria, my oldest, is more like me, super chatty or whatever. She didn't have any use for him whatsoever. And that took a long time. That took a year and a half before it was even just neutral. And now it's a lot better. They're actually getting along really well, but yeah, it's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. So you live in a different home now?
We still live in the same home. Yeah, and I did that quite intentionally because I just felt at the time that the girls were 12 and 13. What are a few things that I can do to just really reinforce that their life is in fact stable? Mm-hmm. I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to make any changes because the dad leaving was a massive change, like all the carpet yanked, you know? So I thought, okay, what can I do? So I intentionally stayed in this house. And then Jonathan and I got married and we had talked about selling it and building so that, you know, it was something that we could build together and whatever, but just not the right time. And he's at home and the girls are so comfortable here. You know, they'll be moving out, right? Bree's 18. Megan's got one more year of high school and she'll be going to university. And I don't know, I think it's important just to create like natural stability for them as well, right? That nothing's changed. They go to school, they come home, same home, just come home. Right. So yeah, I felt that was important.
What I wanted to bring up is, right before the show we were talking and we talked about guilt that comes up when someone does take their life and the guilt that you felt, and I talked about how it was for me. So talk to me about how that, because I think that's such a common universal feeling that someone has. And it doesn't just go with someone who takes their life. It goes with, you know, it goes with someone who passes on. And sometimes we feel we could have done better in taking care of them or in many different ways. We can feel guilty about so many different things in our lives. We, you know, in work, we could have, I screwed that up and, you know, I thought, why did I do that? So there's so many different levels. But obviously, when someone takes their life, particularly your situation, your husband, how did it make you feel when it came to guilt? You said you felt extremely guilty.
Yeah. So the obvious one is like, oh my goodness, did I cause this? Right. So that's the obvious guilt. And I think everybody would assume that that's the main one. That actually wasn't the main one for me, because I couldn't take the blame, because I did a lot for this guy because I loved him. Right. So whatever I could do, I did. And like I said, sure, I could have done things differently, and I do now, but my biggest guilt was because the last 2 months of his life, he was so incredibly difficult to live with as a boss, as a fellow employee, and as a husband. It was just awful. That actually when he left, I had such a feeling of relief. And that caused me such great guilt, to the point that I was so scared to admit to someone that I was relieved he was gone. And that was super tricky, right? But it was such a deep sense of relief and like a huge exhale. But at the same time, that guilt just screamed right in my face. Like, how dare you? How dare you be relieved that he killed himself? And definitely wasn't happy that he killed himself. It wasn't happiness. It was just relief that the battle was over, right? Just that the like walking on eggshells every day and just like, not knowing what kind of a mood you're walking into. Were you going to get blasted or were you going to get an attaboy? It was just horrendous. And so that guilt for sure. And I lived under the type of personality that always said, what happens at home stays at home. Therefore, I eliminated 95% of my friends. And I hung out with zero other women because I was not allowed to talk. So anything that ate me alive, if he found out that I spoke to anyone, I would never hear the end of it. So I decided I don't want to get yelled at, so I just won't talk. So I would only journal. So after he left, I knew finally I was safe to go and talk to friends, and I would. And I would still hear him in the back of my mind, although he's already gone, about, you know, what happens in our house should stay in our house. And oh, it was like torture, right? Because it was so relieving to get off my chest finally, because I processed out of my mouth. Yet the guilt of actually doing what he's always said I'm not allowed to do, you know, like it's a crazy, convoluted, back and forth, inconsistent argument in your brain that you don't quite know how to balance out, right? Your heart wants the relief, but your brain is scared that you're going to get yelled at, you know, like, where's that balance? And so there was a guilt of just telling a couple of people, just close friends, how awful he was when he was awful. But it produced such healing in me just to let that garbage out of my mind and out of my heart, you know? And they say, if you don't get it out, whether it be to a therapist or a friend, it'll rot inside of you and you'll either get physically sick or you'll lose your mind. So I do believe it's really important to talk about it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I think, you know, even you sharing this tonight with us and with the audience out there who are listening or who will be listening, I think it's something that we all can take in and assimilate into who we are to whatever degree we can. So we're going to take another break and we'll come back and talk some more with Laura about some of these challenges and you know, what it's like to move on from this. Because I think that's one of the things we all have to do in any of these situations is where we are now and how do we move on from there. We'll be right back. Thank you, Laura.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, we're back with Laura Sandstra. Laura, you had mentioned about the emotion of forgiveness. Tell us about that. How does that come into play with what you're talking about?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, anger is a natural step of grief, any research you do. And I was super mad at him for leaving me with a company that I didn't feel like I could run by myself. Leaving me with two teenage daughters. And I was super, super bitter about it for a long time. I would say, honestly, if I had to honestly say how long, I would say almost 3 years. And I would, you know, okay, well, whatever, I have to let that go. But I never like actually processed it as forgiveness. And there's a little bit of an element of abandonment here too, right? Like he left me and he left his children. And that causes anger. That causes like crazy feelings of like, hey, wait, what? And so I really had to process that. And there's a lot of freedom attached to forgiveness, but it doesn't mean that it's a 5-minute process. And, you know, any grief counseling that you go through, anger is a super important step. And, you know, my mom always says, you know, you can't jump to the next step. You have to walk through everything to get to the next step. And walking through unforgiveness is a crappy road. I don't know. It's gross. I don't like it. I don't like to be angry. I don't like to be, that's not my natural bent. That's not where I like to land. And so I just had to really start to, you know, search my heart and go, okay, like I'm holding this against him pretty darn hard and it's only eating me alive, right? He's good. He's gone. So yeah, forgiveness was a big deal and it took me a long while to get there. And I think on his 4th anniversary of him leaving, I think it was, yes, because we're 4 and a half. So it's not long ago, like last November, I always do a nice post to him on Facebook and just say that it's the anniversary of or whatever. And I said, I feel like this is the first year that I can look back and go, I'm for real not angry anymore. And it's changing the memories that I remember, like the good stuff starting to bubble to the top, not the fights we've had, not the how difficult he was, not that. And that's when I could really tell I had forgiven, because when you're negative and you're in unforgiveness, all the negative is the first thing. It's right in front of your face. And yeah, just funny memories and things he was amazing at. And I don't know, just I could even be grateful for certain things that happened in our life, even though he wasn't here to share them any longer, right? And it's very liberating, my goodness. Like, I would just really encourage anyone who's walked through this and feels that bitterness, it's okay. And it's a good process. Just keep walking forward and keep pushing towards that forgiveness. That's a big deal. And I'm a journaler, so I wrote him a letter. And I wrote that I forgive him. I forgive him for leaving. I forgive him for the hurt that was caused and just tried to more empathize with his struggle, right? I don't know what was going on in him. And his personality was a strong fighter and a problem solver and a producer. And, you know, like he was kind of a rock star. So for a rock star to just say, I'm out, there was a definite battle going on in there that I have to acknowledge. So
I believe you told me that a friend of his had told you that he had once tried this before, that you didn't know about that?
I had no idea. I found out after he was gone that this was actually his third attempt on his life. And his friend was around on his second attempt when he was 19. And that was a skeleton that he kept tucked away in his closet. I never knew that till after he was gone. So that's wild. And his friend is like, man, like 40 years, I thought he had beaten this, you know, or whatever it was, like from 19 to 52, like 30 some years. That's craziness. So yeah,
I had no idea that he had tried twice before.
No, that's right. I had no idea that that was even a struggle, because if I had, I feel like I would have reacted in a couple of situations a little differently. Cause we had had, well, we fought and we're a kind of a normal married couple, but also when you own your own business, there's heat. You gotta battle it out once in a while. And I would say in our marriage, maybe 10 times, he would just throw in the heat of the battle, a little suicide threat. And I never took it seriously. I just took it as manipulation. Like, oh, you're going to play that card, are you? That's really playing dirty. Not knowing it was actually real. I didn't know. Right? So I didn't know the past either. Had I known the past, I probably would have went, whoa, I think we need to go talk to someone. But would he have talked to someone? This I don't know. I don't think he would have. Just that natural personality.
What would you say to someone who is in the situation that you were in, and how do you think you could help? I mean, I think you're helping people right now talking what you're talking about, but I think what you've been through and what you've processed and what you've learned is extremely helpful to people. But if you had a friend that was dealing with a marriage right now that was kind of rocky and stuff, and let's say the husband said, hey, I'm going to kill myself, or, you know, some people say it sometimes, just throw that out.
Yes.
In anger or they're trying to get something from it. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I don't think there's a quick fix. I don't, because if I put myself back in that time, it's easy to say, oh, well, tell him he needs to go get counseling. Well, I don't think he would have heard that. Right. Like, I think that would have just been an explosive fight. And I understand that. And I think that it just has to be small, subtle things. Like, what can you do as the other spouse, as the healthier spouse, if that's even fair to say, because we're all in the sludge together. Right. But what are other little things that could contribute to a more stable, calm environment? Don't poke the bear. I don't know. And I don't think I did, because I'm a peacemaker and I prefer happy and peaceful. He was happy with confrontation. So I always tried to just bring it down. I didn't want the fight. But I don't know. You're not alone. No, you think your marriage is the worst one and you think that your fights are the ugliest, but it's not true. It's not true. We're all in this together. It's like a flat playing field. Like, nobody's up here. Nobody's down here. We're all here and we all need each other. We need to hear each other's experiences. We need to just link arms. And I don't know if you are encouraged not to say something to anyone, I don't like that, because you're not taking care of yourself and your own heart then, and you cannot be a better spouse, right? And I think that's kind of manipulation and all of that too. So,
yeah. Well, what I think what you just said is really, really true. You know, you're not alone, and this is not just we're all in this together, basically, is what you're saying.
Not for real.
You think that you have the worst marriage when you're having this terrible fight. You think, like, how can I, you know, all these things come in your mind. I know, I mean, I'm divorced. So I remember when, you know, I'm good friends with my ex-wife, but I remember at times thinking, oh my gosh, this, how can we go on with this? And yet we were able to stay friends and still, you know, I have three children and we still all get together. And, but it takes work and it takes, I think, like you said, it takes talking about it. And that's the hard thing is to be, I think one of the things I've learned is to love is to really be vulnerable, to open yourself up.
Agreed.
And, it's hard to do, particularly, you know, when you don't know how the other person's going to react.
Yes, 100%.
And I think you'd be surprised to see. I mean, you'll know more about that other person when you're vulnerable to them and find out how they react to that. I believe that's. And I think we're, you know, but the one thing that I'm really getting out of this from hearing you is we're not alone.
No.
And I think that's really important. Mm. And that's a big thing that the film that I made, Extra Innings, is really about. I made it to share with people so they can really see you're not alone.
Yes.
And there are so many people out there who struggle with all kinds of different challenges.
Yes.
And it's important to get help if you need help or any way that you can get help.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'd like to end by just saying thank you so much for sharing the story on the show tonight.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I wish you all the best, and keep going out there and you know, listening to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll mention again, the movie is called Extra Innings. It's on Amazon Prime. I believe it's a movie that moves people. And if you like it, share it with other people. So, Laura, thank you so much for being on tonight. It's been a pleasure. And let's stay in touch. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Through here, because it's not set up. Sam hasn't set it up yet. He's
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners, looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.